Chapter 4. Oh my, said Stahlia, staggered by the sight before her. How magnificent! The Nargis Fountain, situated in the centre of the courtyard of the Star in Cascada, was fashioned of blue and white quartz with a five-pointed base. Each of the star's points referred to a different manifestation of fresh water: lakes, rivers, springs, rain, and mist. The icy waters of the Nargis River arced high up into the sky, balancing aloft a gemstone of Nargis ice, which refracted the slanting light. The water drifted down, tracing elaborate patterns of water droplets and soft rainbows, falling into an intricate series of stepped pools. Dew trembled in the air around the fountain. The courtyard of the Star hummed with visitors of all stations, but when people neared the edge of the pools, they would fall quiet, listening to the water's patter and splash. They would dip one hand into the turbulent lower basin, letting droplets fall off each of their fingers in turn as they muttered the five prayers for health, home, safety, comradeship, and the future of the realm. Travellers journeyed many leagues just to gaze upon the fountain, but desperate pilgrims afflicted with illnesses also ringed these lower pools. Some wore finery and trailed clouds of sandalwood in their wake. Some sported stained woolens and flea bites flecked their skin. It was said that drinking the waters might lift the spirits of the depressed, ease grief or mend a broken body. Yet the waters behaved capriciously. They did not often work their magic. For every person healed, many more walked away deprived of their last hope. Stahlia of Winton hung back a little from the basin's edge, with her husband and daughter beside her. They had changed into clean outfits and dropped their light cases at the traveller's ease as soon as their ship had docked. Stahlia and Willem had brought their daughter Persia to the fountain, for the chance that it might heal her leg. She was their only child, now 9 summers old, and her incapacity grieved them like a throbbing toothache. Stahlia grabbed Persia's hand.
She will still be my Persia, even if the waters refuse to magic her leg. But I can hardly credit that a hobbled future lies in store for her.
Stahlia watched, barely breathing, as a careworn mother in front of her dipped a battered metal cup in the Nargis basin and gave it to her toddler to drink. She then spoke distinctly,
"Can you hear me, Jaren?"
At the same time, an elderly man with twisted fingers kept plunging his hands into the swirls.
"I need me hands to work," he pleaded. "I need me hands to work."
When his infirmity remained unchanged, a sister of sorrow in her grey habit glided to his side, speaking softly to him. Gathering her courage, Stahlia said,
"Come, lamb,"
to Persia, and brought her up to the side of the basin. Willem pulled out of his waist the embroidered white linen kerchief that had been one of his late mother's prized possessions. Barely daring to breathe, Stahlia dipped it into the waters, wetting it thoroughly to absorb the enchantment. She took the sopping cloth and rubbed it up and down Persia's damaged leg under her ankle-length woolen dress.
"Oh, it is so cold," giggled Persia, cringing.
"Oh, look, I see a bird way high up taking a bath."
"I see it too, my girl,"
said Willem, but Stahlia didn't look up.
"Has the crooked bone straightened?"
For good measure, Stahlia dipped the kerchief again and repeated the application. Then she rose from her knees. Willem had taken off his hat to show respect. The upper skin of his forehead showed less weathering than the rest of his face, and his medium brown curls had caught some of the mist. Stahlia's eyes met his, as they were of the same height. She could read what he was thinking because it was what she was thinking. Through the grace of the waters, let our girl be cured. Persia gazed around the teeming courtyard with wonder. At that moment, a nearby vendor opened his stall, his display of multicoloured silk ribbons fluttering out gaily into the wind.
Oh, look!
Cried Persia. Irresistibly drawn, she pulled away from her mother's side and ran to the vendor's stall.
She runs gracefully, as if she'd never been crippled.
Steady on, steady on, called Willem, running after her.
Stalia fell to her knees. She rested her forehead on the basin rim, her face wet with a mix of tears and spray.
Nargis, I can never repay you for what you have done. I worshipped you unthinkingly before. For the rest of my days, I am yours. Willem scooped Persia up joyfully, and when she realised that she had run without limping, she shouted, oh, look at me! Oh, Papa!
Of course, Willem bought her the silk ribbon of her choice, which Stalia carefully wove into her plaits. They looked around at the wares of other vendors and the food stalls and the tourist amulets filled with drops from the fountain. When their joy and giddiness wore off, they wanted to leave the courtyard, which had grown much more crowded as the day lengthened. The little family struck out on one of the streets, believing that it would lead them in the direction of the textile marketplace Stalia longed to visit. The broad cobblestoned avenues and august buildings spoke of centuries of peace and prosperity. Down one street, they spied a distinguished structure of grey marble.
Could that be the palace? Asked Persia.
A man walking by in a brocaded cloak overheard and chuckled, though not unkindly.
No, little one, that's only an office of the Cascada Bank,
he told her.
The palace is at the top of the slope, look.
He said with a pointing gesture.
You can see its white towers in the sky.
Although Willem had a good sense of direction, they were too shy to ask about routes, and the family soon lost its bearings. Eventually, the travellers found themselves in a quiet neighbourhood of stately homes, each surrounded by unfriendly walls.
Well, Master Willem, which way now?
Stalia teased. On another day, she might have been peeved, but today, even this mischance seemed marvellous.
I apologise to me missus, he replied with his typical easy mockery, sweeping off his hat and bending his knee. I have led us astray, so I must give up the leadership of our little troop. What do you advise, Persia?
Let's go that way.
Persia pointed to the left, and Stalia and Willem shrugged their shoulders over her head and followed her lead. After a short way, a blue tanager swooped down and alighted upon the cobblestones in front of them. Stalia had seen the scarlet variety before, but even the redbird rarely nested in the eastern duchies.
That's a tanager lamb, she told Persia. I have never seen one so close, and never a blue one. What's it doing so far north in the winter? Stand still, don't scare it.
The three of them froze, but the bird acted oddly calmly in front of the humans. It cocked its head several times, as if looking closely at Persia. Then it turned around and hopped away a few feet, stopping to twist its head to see if they followed.
Mama, whispered Persia, the bird likes me.
And so it appeared. They took a few tentative steps forward and the bird continued hopping in front of them. After a few moments, it flew to the top of a nearby metal gate cut into a high stone wall. Persia ran ahead and pushed the gate, which swung open at her touch, grating harshly. She dashed through, the bird leading her forward.
Persia, hold on now, called Willem.
But she was many steps ahead and either did not hear or heed him. Willem rushed through the gate with Stahlia a few paces behind. On the other side, they followed a path that twisted around a thick row of hedges, and then all at once, the three tumbled out into a clearing. In front of them stood a little girl, a head shorter than Persia, dressed in an old-fashioned play smock that covered her up from chin to toe. She also wore a queer white bonnet with a narrow brim, but a deep crown tied under her chin with a broad white ribbon. She was talking to the blue tanager.
"But I didn't ask you to find me a playmate. You can't hijack people off the path," she scolded.
When the tanager sang a few trills, she acted as if she were listening.
"That gate is never left unlocked. You unlocked it yourself."
Persia approached the odd little girl, wide-eyed. The girl looked at the tanager and pretended to translate its song.
"He says you're just what he's been looking for and much too perfect to resist."
Persia laughed in delight and the odd little girl joined in.
"I'm Persia. I'm very pleased to make your acquaintance," said the girl with a little dip of a curtsy.
Stahlia took in that they stood in a beautifully manicured park. Under a massive oak tree, a little creek burbled along, crossed by a footbridge and bordered by flowerbeds, neatly readied for winter. Stone benches lounged in the oak tree's shade and rope swings hung from its branches. A child-sized house with a painted door and shutters drew an enthralled, "Look, Mama!" from Persia. Almost invisible in the light shade, an older woman in a black dress and white cap and white shawl sat watching from one of the benches.
"Oh, pray excuse us," cried Stahlia. "Mayhap we aren't supposed to be here. Are we intruding?"
"No, no. Ye be welcome."
"We are visiting from the Eastern Duchies and such strangers in your great city that we quite lost our way," Willem explained.
"Call me Nana," the woman said. "People have called me Nana for so long you'd think I never had any other name. Chickadee is so lonely for a child to play with. Could your daughter keep her company for a while?"
"Is she your grandbabe?" asked Willem.
"Oh, no, I'm her nursemaid."
Stahlia and Willem sat near the older woman. Stahlia saw Persia lift up her dress and show her new friend her healed leg and turn around to display her silk ribbon. The girls giggled as they ran back and forth across the footbridge, chasing one another. Persia was long-legged and graceful, but her new companion was both quick and quick-witted, darting behind obstacles to escape her reach.
"I'm Willem, and this here is my wife Stahlia. We live in Winton in Andrevale. I work as a peacekeeper for Duke Naven, while Stahlia is a weaver. Her tapestries hang in all the great halls of the Eastern Duchies."
Stahlia's cheeks grew warm. She wished that Willem wouldn't boast about her work so often or so fulsomely. Then Willem, always personable and talkative, described their visit to the fountain and Persia's miraculous cure.
"She had an accident, you see," Stahlia added. "She was dancing last planting fest and a wrong-footed boy tripped her. The healer warned us it might not knit well, but now we can put that sorrow behind us."
"Will ye be staying in Kaskada long?" Nana asked.
"We can't." Willem shook his head. "It took all our savings just for the passage, and Duke Naven wants me back. Stahlia yearns to search for yarn and thread, but we will head back on the ship on the evening tide tomorrow."
Chickadee had escorted Persia all over the little park, pointing out all its features. Now they stood in front of the grown-ups.
"We're hungry, please, Nana," said Chickadee.
Stahlia noticed the girl had velvety brows and long lashes framing warm brown eyes. Grey was the most common eye colour, but Stahlia found Chickadee's unusual looks appealing.
Yes, we're hungry, said Persia, taking on the role of Echo.
Ah, good thing I filled my basket, Nana replied with a cheerful wink,
pulling out from the shade beneath the bench a wicker basket filled with a variety of small turnovers. The girls grabbed one in each hand and ran away to have a private feast in the cunning little house.
Can I offer ye a bite as well? The ones with glaze are sweet and the ones without are savoury.
Stahlia bit into a savoury turnover, discovering a mixture of spicy sausage and melted cheese. She hadn't realised she was so hungry. She couldn't resist scarfing it down in quick mouthfuls. Nana urged her to take another. This was filled with blackcurrant preserves, but a hint of lemon rind brought out the currant's tang. Just as Stahlia realised she was thirsty, Nana produced a cool jug of apple beer, which the three adults passed between themselves with sighs of satisfaction. How many summers has Chickadee? Asked Stahlia.
8, answered Nana.
Stahlia expected Nana might take the opportunity to boast a little about her charge, for the child was clearly imaginative. But all Nana said was that she was a touch willful, but that was understandable, for her mother drove her hard on her lessons.
How old is Persia? Nanny asked.
9, replied Willem. She'll be tall like her mother, and almost as pretty, he said, winking at Stahlia.
Stahlia waved away his flirting and leaned back on the bench, relaxing her tense shoulder muscles in her contentment and the winter sunshine. She only half listened to Willem's description of Winton to Nana as she watched the girls, her own heart leaping each time Persia bounded about like a frisky goat. The playmates climbed on a ladder into a platform in an oak and pretended they were sailors on lookout. Then they scampered down a thick rope. They took turns pushing one another on a swing. When they weren't screaming with laughter, they whispered in each other's ears. Their faces glowed.
Weaving takes so much skill. Do you come from a family in the trade? Asked Nana.
Not really. My father accepted a loom as payment for a debt, Stahlia replied. Willem carried on with the tale of how the loom had sat unused and dusty in the barn until a spate of bad harvests. How Stahlia's father had, in desperation, pulled it out and learned to weave simple blankets. Willem's pride coloured his voice as he related how Stahlia had taught herself to form pictures and figures. All of a sudden, Chickadee called out,
"Stop me, stop!"
Persia grabbed the swing's ropes and the high-class child jumped off and ran up to Nana.
Mama is coming, she announced.
Persia ran over behind her.
How do you know?
She asked, since they heard and saw no one.
I hear the horses.
Stahlia heard nothing. Nana, however, took her charge's report seriously. She got up, doused a cloth in the stream, came back and started carefully wiping Chickadee's hands and face clean of dirt and blackcurrant juice. Persia glanced sideways at her friend and turned to Stahlia, requesting,
"Neat and me too,"
a little worried about whether this noble matron would approve of their having trespassed into this play park, and wanting to make a good impression, Stahlia obliged. She also combed out Persia's honey brown bangs. She told Willem to brush the pastry crumbs off his beard. She patted her own hair under her coif and straw hat, wiped the dust from her boots, and shook out her creased frock. Meanwhile, Nana had helped Chickadee out of her smock. The white blouse underneath had a wide collar and cuffs of the finest lace. Over the blouse, she wore a short waistcoat of dark green silk embossed with an intricate design, and below, a split skirt of the same. Stahlia was admiring the costly fabric when she heard hoofbeats in the distance coming on fast. Then Nana untied the girl's bonnet and the child's long hair, all of which had been stuffed inside the deep crown, tumbled down. In all the known realms of this earth, only the queens of Weirendale had hair of that colour. The cerulean blue of the icy Nargis River. The blue of a blue tanager. In the shade it could look almost turquoise, but it was bluer than the gem. In the sun it could look sky blue, but always with a light green shimmer. By her hair ye shall know her. A snatch of an old lay played in Stahlia's mind. This was not just some child from one of the neighbouring mansions. Persia had been romping all afternoon with the Princella herself, Cerulea, heir to the throne. Willem caught her eye and sprang to his feet. Stahlia called her daughter and held Persia against her own body, her arms protectively crossed about the young girl's chest. Nana cast them an amused glance and started to say something, but they could not hear what, for at that moment a squad of six of the Queen's Shield, equipped in breastplates embossed with silver droplets and blue cloaks, came thundering up on tall black horses. Stahlia glimpsed additional horses behind the phalanx. The soldiers, five men and one woman, had hard faces, and they did not look happy at finding interlopers with the Princella. The silence stretched long, broken only by the horses' fidgety shifting of their hooves, their blows, and the sound of leather creaking. Then the front soldiers pulled their mounts aside to let a particularly fine beast walk forward. Nana and the little girl fell into deep curtsies. Stahlia and Willem more awkwardly followed suit, while Persia just stood, awestruck. In the middle of the riders, a petite woman, garbed in a white riding habit, her blue hair, slightly darker than her daughter's, peeked out from under a tiny hat with a trailing embroidered bag coif, kicked her feet out of the stirrups. Her royal stone, a hexagon of Nargis ice, shimmered from her brow, where it was held in place by an extremely thin, transparent circlet. She declined the proffered assistance of a guard and slid gracefully to the ground. The man jumped forward to grab the reins of her mount.
"What have we here?" asked Queen Cressa, not unpleasantly, but with a slight wariness in her tone.
"Mama, I should like to introduce you to my friend, Persia of Winton," responded Cerulea.
"We have had such a grand time."
"Pleased to make your acquaintance, Persia of Winton," said the Queen, using a soft tone to the child, who finally responded to Stahlia's tug and made a deep and grateful curtsy. The monarch then turned to the nursemaid.
"Nana?"
Stahlia's anxiety over their trespass escalated so that her legs quivered.
"Let me present her parents, Your Majesty," said Nana in a bit of a rush. "Good folk," she added. "Willem and Stahlia, visitors from Andravale."
"Your servants, Your Majesty," mumbled Stahlia and Willem, trying to bow even lower.
The Queen considered them a long moment.
"Please rise. If Nana cannot judge who are safe companions for the Princella, the realm is indeed in peril."
"If you will permit me, the real question, Majesty, is how did they get into the palace grounds?"
asked a man who wore a tall feather in the middle of his helm.
"The west gate was unlocked," answered Chickadee.
"The west gate is never unlocked. I regret to contradict you, Captain, but today it was,"
Willem dared to answer.
"Cena,"
the captain barked,
"check this out."
The female shield slid off her horse and disappeared into the hedges.
"Don't be mad, Captain Sternface," said Chickadee. "Mayhap the squirrels unlocked it."
Everyone laughed, breaking the tension, as Stahlia suspected the clever child intended. The Queen then spoke to them graciously, inquiring about conditions in the Eastern Duchies. She questioned Willem closely about any crime or troublemakers in his ward, the toll of last winter's grip, and how the autumn yields had shaped up. She moved on to the purpose of their visit to the capital, congratulated them on Perseus' recovery, and elicited the story of their losing their way. Stahlia stood beside Willem as he conversed with the Queen, stealing little glances, wanting to remember forever the pattern of the embroidery on her cuffs, the drape of her collar, and the shimmer of the clear jewel on her forehead.
Is this your first time visiting the capital, mistress?
The Queen tried to include her in the conversation. Oh, yes. That is, no, I've never been here before. Mum, your majesty. Stahlia nearly died of embarrassment at her fumbling answer. The Queen smiled graciously and turned back to Willem. Stahlia looked around to see what the girls were doing. Bored with the adults, they were now feeding the Princella's horse stalks of dried grass.
"This is Smoke," she overheard the Princella tell Persia. "Smoke, this is Persia of Winton."
Stahlia watched apprehensively as this beast, so much more dangerous looking than farming drays, gently lipped bits from her daughter's hands. The artist in Stahlia registered the horse's black coat and the girl's brown and blue hair gleaming in the slanted light. When the horse finished the last offering, the Princella grabbed Percy's hand and rushed over to the circle of adults.
"Mama, come see the fishing hole we found!"
They all trooped over to the little stream that meandered through the play park. Stahlia, still under the spell of the morning's magic, felt drawn to kneel on the bank and dip her hand in the babbling quicksilver. She let the water drip off each of her fingers as she silently chanted prayers to Nargis. She could feel the Queen's gaze upon her. Stahlia cupped the water in her hand and took a sip. It tasted like any stream water, but was somehow more refreshing. Stahlia held the next swallow in her mouth longer, savouring its cool, woodsy wetness, the flavour of pebbles and pine needles. The Princella, so much bolder than Persia, impatiently tugged her mother's hand in both of hers and pulled her the last few paces.
"Mama, you're supposed to look at the fishing hole."
"I see it, Cerulea. It's rather deep. Some day we'll rustle up a fishing rod for you and give it a try."
"Sergeant Bristle is probably your man for fishing, my Princella," said the captain. "He's always telling tall tales about the fish he caught back in his wastrel youth in Lakevale. But it's too dark now to see if anything lurks down there."
The Queen glanced up at the lengthening shadows. "The days run short, and we've dallied much longer than I intended." She instructed the captain to make arrangements for two shields to escort the family out of the grounds and to their inn. She waved away their thanks, saying it was the least the throne could do for their services entertaining the Princella.
"Bid your friend farewell," she said to Chickadee.
Somehow, it hadn't occurred to either child that they would have to part.
"No!"
they shrieked simultaneously, wrapping their arms around one another. Shocked silence greeted the unthinkable impertinence of contradicting the Queen. The two little girls standing in the waning light clung to one another like the sole survivors of a shipwreck. Several of the shields looked away or down at their feet, while the nursemaid and the Queen both appeared nonplussed at such disobedience. Stahlia moved first, kneeling, talking to the girls quietly, rubbing their backs, making promises she knew were lies, that they knew were lies about how they would see each other again soon. After a few moments, Persia transferred her teary embrace to her mother's neck. Stalia worried more about the Princella, who ran to bury her head in Smoke's flank, keeping her face hidden. The horse turned around to nibble at the little girl's collar, stamping his back hooves. Queen Cressa thoughtfully stepped back to the country travellers and drew them a few paces aside from everyone else.
"Would you grant me a boon?" she quietly inquired.
"Nana?" Cerulea asked, as the two of them rode toward the palace and a cold wind started to blow in their faces.
"Did Mama enchant Persia and her folks? Did she make her forget me?"
I suspect she did. Her face has changed after she touched them and they left without seeing us."
"How could she do that? Why would she do that?"
Her voice rose higher.
"I don't know, Chickadee. You'll have to ask her."
In her anger, Cerulea kicked Smoke into a gallop.